Welcome to Health Connections, an exploration of people, health, and policy. I'm Brandon Hollingsworth, joined almost as always by Dr. Carol Myers of the University of Tennessee College of Nursing. Dr. Myers, welcome back.
Good to be here. Thank you.
And at the end of this week, we're looking at a pretty significant deadline. That's September 30th. That's the end of the current federal fiscal year. And there are some health-related matters that are going to connect right to that deadline on September 30th. Why don't you help set the stage for us?
Yes, I've been calling midnight on September 30th the witching hour. And the three things that I focus on most is it will end the current CHIP funding.
And that's Children's Health Insurance Program.
Exactly. Thank you. Nurses are bad about acronyms. It will also put us over a fiscal cliff by ending the funding to the community health centers, what we call CHCs. And then also, and it also ends the process that's currently being used to put forth legislation about the Affordable Care Act repeal and replacement plans. And of course, we have one that's currently active. We expect, you know, a vote on it this week.
Well, let's start from the top. You and I wanted to talk about some health disparities. And disparity simply means a difference. And really what we're talking about is differences in people's health, their actual personal health in Appalachia versus different parts of the country. Many of our conversations so far in this series have revolved around the decisions in Washington, coverage, care, access. And these are tangentially related, but we're talking specifically about how people like you and I feel on a daily basis, what kind of diseases we might have, the rate of those diseases within our own bodies. Let's talk a little bit about a study that was done in conjunction with the Appalachian Regional Commission and the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation that looked at 41 individual health indicators. What did it find out?
Well, it found out, looking at those 41 indicators, that on 8 of them, the Appalachian region actually is better than the national average. So things like HIV prevalence, excessive drinking, the prevalence of chlamydia, which is a sexually transmitted infection, and then the percentage of the population under age 65 that's uninsured a little bit.
That surprised me, too. We're doing better than the rest of the country or other regions of the country in those with insurance who are younger than 65.
Right. But one thing I think we do have to note that how large the Appalachian region is. So when we think about Appalachia, we think about our part here in East Tennessee
right,
and maybe
right.
over to
Western North Carolina.
Right. But Appalachia really comes from New York all the way down through Alabama.
It's 13 states. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So these are good. We're good on 8 of the indicators.
What about the other 33? Mm-hmm. That's my question.
The other 33, we are worse than the national average. So that's the concern. And if you want to translate this, so what does it mean? Well, on 7 of 10 of the leading causes of death, our rate is much higher than the national rate.
And some of those causes of death include heart disease, cancer, deaths from injuries, which I found interesting, stroke. And diabetes, as well as suicide, we're doing worse than the rest of the nation.
Right, and also in the vein of suicide, poisoning, which includes overdoses, we are significantly higher in the Appalachian region than the country as a whole. So those are major concerns that take a terrible human toll of the people who live in Appalachia.
I would think that if you're looking at the country region by region and you see that one region out of the others has a markedly different outcome in terms of, for instance, the leading causes of death, like we said, or even health factors, that there must be some explanation, that there may be some unifying factor that explains that. What do we know about the why of some of these issues that you and I just talked about? What helps explain it?
That's a great question. So in healthcare, we look at health disparities. And Brandon, I would expand on your definition. It's not just a difference. We actually pull the thread through further that many of the differences that we see could be changed. So we think that there's a bit of inequity associated with them. So when we look at disparities in health, we look at what determines health. And that's maybe the best answer to your question. And we look at health determinants. When we look at health overall, most people think about health equates with health care. Well, it does, but only for a small portion. Just about 20% of your health outcomes are attributable to the health care that you receive. So what's the other 80%? Well, so much of it is related to what we call social determinants of health. So one way very globally to look at this, it has to do with where you live, work, and play. But when you break that down further, it has to do about your socioeconomic status, and that really is the number one determinant of your health. And then it has to do with your access to care, family and social support. That's so important, and that's an area where we tend to do a little bit better in Appalachia. So we also look at health behaviors, which contribute about 30% of your health. But I would say that health behaviors are socially situated. The choices you make are based on the choices that you have. So of these health determinants that we've talked about, socioeconomic status, health care, your health behaviors, they are all interrelated. So there's most attention is given to the social determinants of health. And what is significant to me is that we can influence or make better those social determinants of health through health policy. And this is where we get to the idea that really health and all policy. Economic policy is health policy. Transportation policy is health policy. So we need to look very broadly. And this concerns me because right now we're not focusing in on these things, where there's a lot of discussion about health care, but it's just one small slice. We need to be looking at the larger environment that contributes to your health.
As we mentioned toward the top of the show, Friday at midnight is going to be a pretty critical time to watch because we may see funding expire for the Children's Health Insurance Program, as well as funding for what are called community health centers. And I want to spend the balance of our episode this week talking about those community health centers because last week it was reported that the community health centers in Tennessee could lose up to $50 million in their federal funding, which is a significant chunk of their budgets, if action is not taken by this midnight Friday night deadline. And a community health center, it's estimated there are about 187 of them across the state. I just want to begin with defining what they are, because we're not talking about your standard large hospital or even like a walk-in clinic or a Walgreens or something like that. So what is a community health center?
Okay. Community health centers, and some people know them as federally qualified health centers, so those terms are used interchangeably, but they are an essential, and I'll explain why essential, primary care medical home for 1 in 15 Americans. So that's 26 million Americans. But I think the point to me that's most salient, these are among the most vulnerable of Americans. So they're mostly uninsured or they're publicly insured. 71% of the clients that use a community health center are below the federal poverty level, which is a low standard. So they are singularly the most comprehensive primary care providers for medically underserved populations. And they do a very good job at providing, and I want to emphasize the word, comprehensive primary care. So for people in East Tennessee, they're saying, well, do we have any of these? Well, Cherokee Health is a federally qualified health center, and we have others. And they're just an essential part of the healthcare delivery system. And what's so important is their emphasis on primary care, because as we look at the delivery of healthcare in the United States, that is one of the many areas where we fall short.
It's fascinating to me to talk about these community health centers because I didn't know much about them before the topic started to be raised in the news, like I said last week. These 187 community health centers across Tennessee serve almost 385,000 Tennesseans. That includes close to 100,000 children, almost 6,000 veterans, and as we talked about, typically people who don't have many choices, the choices that you and I might have to, you know, to go within our networks and with our insurance and programs like that. So they don't have nearly as many options. 35% of health center patients in Tennessee are covered by Medicaid or TennCare, is worth noting as well. You mentioned Cherokee Health Systems just a moment ago, which runs here in Knoxville, which is an urban area. Are these community health centers typically found in urban areas? What kind of populations do they serve geographically?
Well, actually, they're found in urban areas, but Cherokee Health also has many satellite clinics in rural areas. So the profile that we see is urban, underserved areas, as well as rural areas. I think there's an important point here, Brandon. Not only are they providing health care to these people who live in these underserved areas, inner city, rural areas, but they're also an economic engine for where they're located, because healthcare is a vital service that helps run our economy these days. So they have that double purpose. There's another thing that's a salient feature of community health centers is they truly are community-based. The board that governs community health centers has to have at least 51% of the board members from the community. So it is about the community, and I think that's an important value by itself, but it's also very important when we talk about healthcare, because healthcare embodies a lot of our personal and community values, and this helps to keep that connection that I think is so important.
Well, as we mentioned toward the top of the conversation, Carol, we are looking at a deadline, as you called it, the witching hour, which is midnight, Friday, September 30th. This week, what will you be watching?
The programs that are funded, and the funding ends with the current budget. The two that I'm looking at the most is the Children's Health Insurance Program, and I'm also looking at community health centers because they're so important to the delivery of essential primary care services. But the big thing that we're watching is what happens with the current Cassidy-Graham bill to repeal the Affordable Care Act. It must be done by midnight on September 30th to be done under the current budget reconciliation. And this is one of the most far-reaching bills that we've seen. And the fact that it's being done at such a frantic pace causes me to be hyper-vigilant and hoping that perhaps common sense will prevail and we'll go to regular business order, we'll go back to bipartisanship that Senator Lamar Alexander attempted to exemplify, and we'll look at more in a more deliberate way something that is one-sixth of our economy and so essential for so many people. So next week is a critical week, and we all need to be paying attention and communicating your perspective, whatever it is, to your elected officials in Washington.
No doubt. As we often say at the end of these conversations, there will be a lot for us to talk about the next time we meet in early October. We'll stay tuned for that. Dr. Carol Myers, an associate professor in the University of Tennessee College of Nursing. She's an expert on public health policy as well, and our guest on Health Connections. Dr. Myers, as always, a pleasure.
Thank you. Pleasure's all mine.